I'm John Kroll. Today on No Limits, we're going to talk about Next Indiana Campfires. Next Indiana Campfires is an Indiana humanities program that pairs literature and nature to encourage Hoosiers to explore the state's wild places. We'll talk about what the program is and how it works. My guests are Leah Nemias, Director of Programs and Community Engagement with Indiana Humanities, and Cliff Chapman, Executive Director, Central Indiana Land Trust. Please join the conversation. Call 866-476-3881. Email nolimitswfyi.org. Facebook is nolimitswfyi. Twitter is WFYI. Now, this news. Welcome to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of thestatehousefile.com, and your host. We're going to be talking today about Next Indiana Campfires. That's an Indiana humanities program that pairs literature and nature to help Hoosiers explore the state's wild places and spark conversations about conservation and stewardship. If you'd like to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimitswfyi.org. You can find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi or on Twitter at WFYI. My guests are Leah Nemias, who is the Director of Programs and Community Engagement with Indiana Humanities, and Cliff Chapman, who is the Executive Director of the Central Indiana Land Trust. Welcome to both of you.
Thank you.
Thanks, John.
It's good to have both of you here. So tell me first, I guess, let's get the obvious thing out of the way. Let's talk about what Next Indiana Campfires is.
Okay.
I'll start with you on that one, Leah.
All right. So Next Indiana Campfires is a new program that Indiana Humanities is doing, time to the bicentennial. So part of our general thoughts about the bicentennial is we want Hoosiers to not only look back 200 years, but also to be thinking about what does the next Indiana look like? What's the present and future of Indiana? So one of the themes that we're really excited to explore is the future of our environment, of stewardship and conservation. So we thought, how cool would it be if we were to take Hoosiers all around the state on hikes, bike rides, canoe and paddling trips, and while we're out on the trail together, to read some of the great works of Hoosier environmental literature, so writers like Gene Stratton Porter, Edwin Way Teal, Scott Russell Sanders, as well as writers maybe that are less well-known but that really have done a lot to shape our thinking about what is Indiana, what makes it special, and then have a discussion, you know, about the texts, about the experience of being outside together, and also about what we want the future of Indiana to look like, how we balance the different ways that Hoosiers use nature as we look ahead to our future.
And Cliff, how does the Central Indiana Land Trust plug into this?
Well, you know, Lee and I were talking very early on in the planning, and I have contacts that manage natural areas all across the state, different land trusts and folks with the Department of Natural Resources. And in the very early stages, kind of planning from, you know, Bald Cypress Swamps to the Indiana Dunes. And then for the Central Indiana Land Trust, we're going to be hosting the first hike at our Oliver's Woods property on May 11th. And I have the honor to be able to participate in that and maybe do a little natural history along with the literature. And then we're going to be hosting another one in October at our Glacier's End Nature Preserve in southern Johnson County. Both of those properties are not open to the public just yet, so it'll be kind of a neat opportunity for people to see them.
Well, there was a kickoff last night,
yes.
Right?
Okay. Yeah, so last night we actually hosted a kickoff in-conversation event. So we invited a very significant nature writer, Terry Tempest Williams, who's based in Utah, and she was in conversation with her friend and contemporary, Scott Russell Sanders, who a lot of people will know is based down in Bloomington. And we got to listen in as these two incredible environmental writers and thinkers were sitting and talking together about their own careers and their sources of inspiration. What were some of the early experiences with nature that got them excited and passionate as advocates, but also to approach thinking about the environment through writing, talking about how the humanities in particular, how we think about nature because of the way it's written about, and how many important writers have helped us, you know, conceive of the natural world and our place in it, and help us sort through, you know, the kind of complicated relationship that we have to nature and the environment and questions around stewardship.
So, and then the next event is the hike next week, right? 6 days from now.
Yeah. So we're doing 18 hikes across the state between next Wednesday and the beginning of November. So we're excited to kick off with our friends at Central Indiana Land Trust. For each of the outings that we're doing, we've partnered with a local organization that has deep relationships with that particular property as well as with the community. And we are longtime friends of the Central Indiana Land Trust, so we're really excited to get to kick off with them.
And Cliff, which book is going to be tied in? What literature is going to be tied in with this hike?
I've been working with a scholar. So each of these hikes will have a humanities scholar on board who's helping choose texts and facilitate discussion, along with, in most places, like with Central Indiana Land Trust, a naturalist or an educator who can really talk about the landscape. So we know we're going to be reading some Mary Oliver. She's a Pulitzer-winning poet who connects a lot of themes through nature, spirituality. She's an incredible writer. Who are the two of the other ones? Wallace Stegner. We're going to be reading, I think, an excerpt of his 1964 Wilderness Letter, which is a really famous text about environmental conservation. And you'll have to get back to me on the third one. I remember, but I don't remember.
Well, a couple of questions spring to mind here immediately. How did you choose first the books that are going to be read? And then how did you choose the places? So I'll start with choosing the books. I'll start with you on that one, Leah. But the places, I'd also want to hear Cliff's thoughts.
Okay. All right. So really the inspiration for this whole project was a writer named Edwin Waitiel. And he's a pretty significant mid-century nature writer. He kind of is part of this movement when you think of Rachel Carson or Aldo Leopold or other writers after World War II who help awaken Americans to the changes that are kind of being wrought by industrialization and pollution and really kind of get people thinking about the need for action. This leads, of course, later in the 1970s in particular to a lot of environmental legislation. Well, he grew up on his grandparents' farm in the Indiana Dunes. So he won a Pulitzer for other writing later, but he wrote this wonderful memoir called Dune Boy, which to me is really up there with something like Girl of the Limberlost, another great environmental humanities text by an Indiana author. So we were actually doing some separate research about the 100th anniversary of the Pulitzer Prize, which is 2016. And we were kind of trying to figure out who are Indiana Pulitzer winners and discovered Edwin Waitiel. And I was like, you know, the place we should be reading Teal is at the dunes. So that was kind of the genesis of the whole project, to take people out to the places that inspired writers to think about whether there are ways to you know, draw new connections between the literature. So from there, we just started doing a whole bunch of research of Hoosiers who've written on the environment. There's this incredible online resource that Ball State University put together a few years ago that's basically like the Wikipedia of Indiana nature writers. So that was an incredible resource to go to because that helped us find writers that, you know, maybe we know are very famous, like Booth Tarkington or Theodore Dreiser, but we're not as well familiar with their environmental writing, as well as some other writers that were new to me. There was a woman named Marguerite Young, who was kind of a experimental writer in the 1940s, 1950s. She's from Indianapolis. She's kind of writing some really out there postmodern literature, but she's also writing a lot about the Midwest and what it means to be a Midwesterner.
Is she the one who did the Eugene Debs?
Yes, she did this kind of epic biography of Eugene Debs that I'm not even sure she ever finished, but I mean, she... Yeah, so she did that. She did another.
It's a
really
very impressionistic portrait.
Yes, she's a delightful writer, and she wrote another great book about New Harmony and the people, Owenites, and the people settling New Harmony.
If you are just joining us, we are talking about Next Indiana Campfires. It's an Indiana humanities program that pairs literature and nature to encourage Hoosiers to go outside and explore the state's wild places and also think about conserving and preserving our natural environment. If you'd like to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org. You can find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi or on Twitter at WFYI. Cliff, and I'm going to set this up because people, obviously, this is radio and people can't see what's going on in here. But you brought in this stack of books with you. And we're telling, before we went on the air, you were telling me this story about how I was reading John McPhee, or no, Leo. I'm not going to anticipate your story here. I mean, it's better to have you tell. But the connection of how that sort of inspired your love of the outdoors and really set you on your career and life path.
Yeah, a theme that I like to think about with this whole program is who inspires who. And so when I was in college, I wanted to do something in nature. But as most college kids, you don't know what. You don't know what that career is going to look like. And so through the different classes I was taking, one of them had us read Sand County Almanac by Aldo Leopold. And if I could, I'll just read like a really quick excerpt.
Oh, sure.
Yeah. And this is from an essay that he wrote called Thinking Like a Mountain. And so this is in Arizona. We reached the old wolf in time to watch a fierce green fire dying in her eyes. They had just shot this wolf because that was the thing they did in the working for the U.S. Forest Service in Arizona. I realized then and have known ever since that there was something new to me in those eyes, something known only to her and to the mountain. I was young then and full of trigger itch. I thought because fewer wolves meant more deer that no wolves would mean hunter's paradise. But after seeing the green fire die, I sensed that neither the wolf nor the mountain agreed with such a view. And reading this book, I think millions of people have read this book in college, and people interested in nature and natural history. And I like to think that what Aldo Leopold was trying to do, talking about that fierce green fire and the dying wolf, is everyone that reads it, you might get a little bit of that in yourself and go out there and try to do something. And so I knew then that I wanted to go into environmental conservation. I wanted to try to save natural areas in my career. And I've been on that course ever since.
So how will one of these hikes work? I mean, maybe because I spend a lot of time around college students. One of the questions I'm sure people will have is there a quiz at the end?
That's a great question.
How do we know?
And the answer is no.
How do we know, though? Do you have to have read the book
before
you come along on the hike? How does it work?
Cool. So that's a great question. The thing that we really want to do is make sure that all kinds of people feel welcome to this, and that if it's been 25 years since you last sat down together and talked about a text, you'll still be in good company. So for each of the readings, we're working with scholars to select, a few different readings that we'll read together along the trail. So there'll be shorter excerpts. They might be poems. They might be excerpts of something like what Cliff just read. They might be, an essay or a short story that we take, read in chunks as we go along. So the typical experience, and I will say there's a few that are definitely not typical. We're doing a five-hour hike through the Indiana dunes in June. We're doing an overnight backpacking trip down in Morgan Monroe State Forest in July. But most of these are about a 90-minute kind of walk or stroll. Hike is probably almost too strong of a word for most of the places we're going. We'll start by reading something short together. We'll pause a few times along the trail. We'll read out loud together. And then at the end of that, hike or walk, we'll gather around an actual campfire, unless it's the prairie in August, which I've learned we don't light any fires anywhere near the prairie in August. So we'll have a metaphorical campfire in that case. And we'll have a meal, we'll have a couple of beers, and we'll start talking about all of it. And what does it mean? And we'll be kind of putting together things that struck us as we were walking or reading, and then kind of, having that open-ended, wide-ranging discussion that connects the literature, the nature, and Indiana's future.
Cliff, go ahead.
I was just thinking for our hike next week at Oliver's Woods Nature Preserve that Central Indiana Land Trust owns. It's right by the Fashion Mall on the north side of Indianapolis. And on that property, we have the confluence of Carmel Creek and the White River. And I lead hikes through there from time to time. And one of the things we talk about is urban ecology and a human-impacted environment, because you see those human impacts there on the property very well. And I think right now in 2016, so many people have a kind of a doomsday approach about what the environment's like now, what our air quality is like now. But then when you read Boo Tarkington talking about what Indianapolis was like 100 years ago, we're walking along a sidewalk, shuffling coal dust, and the air was gray. I think even when we're looking at a place like Oliver's Woods that is definitely impacted, there is ecology there to see. There are native plants and animals there to see. And one thing we don't see is the air.
Mm-hmm.
Things are better now than they were. And I think we can have an optimistic view for the future.
So what book is this one next week? Is it?
Well, I'm not selecting any of the books.
Well, yeah, Clint's not in charge of the book. We're kind of divided. He's to Nature, and I get to be Humanities for this project.
Right, so
it does seem like we should be reading some Booth Tarkington or Theodore Dreiser, who are both Indiana writers who wrote a lot about pollution, frankly. In an urban setting, that'd be kind of fun to do some compare and contrast.
But who are we reading?
Mary Oliver and Wallace Stegner. I know her too.
Right. We've talked this. I'm sorry.
That's okay.
I lost that. I thought that was a general thing. If you are just joining us, we are talking about Next Indiana Campfires. That is an Indiana humanities program that pairs literature and nature to help Hoosiers explore Indiana's wild places and spark conversations about conservation and stewardship. My guests are Leah Naumius, Director of Programs and Community Engagement, Indiana Humanities, and Cliff Chapman, who's the Executive Director of the Central Indiana Land Trust. If you'd like to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. I'm John Kroll. You're listening to No Limits. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of thestatehousefile.com, and your host. We're talking today about Next Indiana Campfires. It's an Indiana humanities program that pairs literature and nature to help Hoosiers explore the state's wild places and get us thinking a little bit about preserving those wild places, preserving our natural heritage. My guests are Leah Naumius, who is Director of Programs and Community Engagement with Indiana Humanities, and Cliff Chapman, who is the Executive Director of the Central Indiana Land Trust. We've gotten an email from a listener, and if you'd like to reach out to us by email, you can do so at nolimits@wfyi.org. This comes from a listener named Benjamin, who says, "Do these hikes cost money?"
Great question.
And how do I register?
All right. So the first thing you can do is go to indianahumanities.org/campfires. Also, if you just go to our homepage, you'll see the link right at the top, and you can sign up there. Almost all of the hikes have a cost of $10, which basically helps us make sure you show up and covers a few of our costs to make sure that you get a meal and have fun with us on the trail. There are two exceptions to that. For those where we're doing some paddling, so we'll be at Eagle Creek Reservoir in July for a sunset paddle around Eagle Creek Reservoir, and we're going to be paddling through the northernmost stand of bald cypress trees anywhere in the country, which happens to be in southern Indiana. Those both have a $15 registration fee that helps cover the cost of your paddle. If you are bringing your own canoe or kayak, then that fee would be lower. And then we have an overnight backpacking trip that we're doing in July, and that costs $200, but that includes all of your meals and your equipment, as well as kind of a 24-hour backcountry hike. We do have waivers available for anyone who that would be a barrier to participation. The information about how to contact me if you're interested in a waiver is also on our website. So indianahumanities.org/campfires.
Are there limits to how many people you can, I mean, do you close registration at some point?
There are limits. They're mostly to make sure that we don't cause any sort of permanent damage to the landscapes we're traveling through.
That would seem to run counter to
some places are more sensitive ecologically than others, frankly. And then also just the kind of quality of experience. So I would say the average one of these is about 30 people. In some cases, it's closer to 20. In some places, it's closer to 40.
Which ones so far seem to be the most in the heaviest demand?
Well, next week's trip up to Oliver's Woods is filling up, so I encourage people to go sign up if you want to join us next Wednesday evening in Indianapolis. The big dunes hike that we're doing in June is starting to fill up, which I'm really excited about. If you've never been to the Indiana Dunes, and I'm a Hoosier from southern Indiana, and it was a long time in my life before I went to the dunes, this is the opportunity you've been waiting for. It's the perfect year to go do it. So that one's starting to fill up, and I think that Eagle Creek Reservoir paddle, sunset paddle, which is at the end of July, that has started to fill up, and I bet will fill up fast. So those are three.
If you're just joining us, we are talking about Next Indiana Campfires. It's an Indiana humanities program that's going to pair books and hiking the outdoors to get Hoosiers to start thinking about Indiana's wild places and how we can hold on to them. If you'd like to join the conversation, you can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. You can find us on Facebook at No Limits WFYI, on Twitter at WFYI, or you can do what a listener named Ron has done and give us a call at 866-476-3881. Ron, welcome to the program.
Hello again, John. Thanks for taking my call.
Certainly.
Once again, I'm going chasing the bottom line here. One of your guests made the comment that because we no longer see coal dust on the sidewalk and that the air and the environment is much better off, and I'm stopped in traffic right now behind a long line of cars, all of them emitting known toxins, especially diesel fumes, known carcinogen. And I disagree in that, you know, Riley Hospital has made a business out of treating 4, 5, 6-year-old kids with cancer. And I relate it to the environment. I mean, this is a new phenomenon. And a recent study suggests that the reason for autism is, in kids has been linked to the use of pesticides. Excuse me. I think as far as making the environment healthy, we've got a long way to go. Thanks for taking my call.
Certainly. Thanks for the call, Ron. Cliff.
Yeah, and I agree that we have a long way to go. And I think it's easy for us to forget that the White River downtown 100 years ago, on a given day in the summer, would have been filled with bloated pig carcasses. Mm-hmm. Because the meatpacking plants would take what they needed and then just throw the carcass of the pigs down in the river. It was really, really disgusting. And it's still a haggard river today. But we're tackling things like with the combined sewer overflows, where raw sewage flows into Fall Creek and Pleasant Run and Pogues Run that goes into the White River. There's like over $1 billion being spent to try to get those events down from over 100 a year to 4. And so I understand things we have a long way to go, but I think it's hard for us to put ourselves into Indianapolis and in Indiana 100 years ago when, frankly, in 1910, when the Department of Natural, well, there was no Department of Natural Resources, but when our first state forest was protected, Clark State Forest, we had half the forest land that we do today. Mm-hmm. So in about 100 years, we doubled the amount of forest land in the state of Indiana. But 200 years ago, 300 years ago, we were 80% covered in forest, and we got down to 10% coverage by 1910.
Yeah, in 1900, Leah. Indiana was the largest producer of forest products in the country. Which accounts for a lot of the deforestation. And I think one of the themes of this project that we also want to explore is the history of Hoosier stewardship, that there is a history here, that we're celebrating our bicentennial. So let's look back to people that have made a difference over the years. One of the stories of reforestation in Indiana was Indiana State Forester Charles Deem, who basically worked with farmers to pass a credit that would give them a tax credit for replanting or foresting unused parts of their property, right? So there has been a history of stewardship. That's one of the themes and the histories we want to explore. I agree with the caller. There's a long way to go. But by honoring, I mean, I think one of the conversations we can have is how do we honor the legacy that we've inherited and make sure that we're leaving something for the future?
And to be fair, to Cliff's point originally, at least I took it as he was saying basically preserving environmental concerns are not just a late 20th and early 21st century concern, that these problems have been here for quite a while.
That's right.
And that's the case. I mean, I was born in Cleveland, Ohio, and I'll be dating myself to a degree here, but I lived there as a kid at the time when the river caught fire.
Yeah.
Right.
And, you know, we think now that something like that just shouldn't be possible, but it was a fairly routine occurrence.
Well, and you couldn't swim in Lake Michigan. And
no.
The dunes is actually one of the other great, incredible stories of conservation in the whole country. And the effort to protect those dudes.
Yeah, and I'm not sure, but I remember have really vivid memory of being with my father at a Cleveland Indians baseball game when I was maybe 2 or 3 years old. And it was in the old municipal stadium, which was right on the lake. And the wind shifted, and came in off of the lake suddenly, and just hearing this massive shudder go through the crowd, I mean, a kind of collective groan, and thinking, oh, man, you know, at that point, and it's not like that anymore. You actually see people out there boating and swimming and doing things in that lake that no one sane would have been doing all that long ago. Cliff.
Well, to pick up on something that Leah said, and I think one of the themes of this overall program is thinking about what we're doing now moving into the future, is Charles Deem with this Indiana at one time, we were kind of leading the country on some of these ideas, and Charles Deem was one of our most brilliant Hoosiers. And the classified forest program is what he created lower taxes on landowners, forest land, and they had to agree to take the cows and the pigs out of the forest. And so the Central Indiana Land Trust just protected a property that was enrolled in classified forest in 1928. We have a copy of the form signed by Charles Deem when it was enrolled. And I think we can look at what that family did. It's an old growth forest. It was the last unprotected old growth forest in the state of Indiana. And we got it protected, and we're dedicating it in just a couple weeks to be open to the public. My staff is down working hard today, building bridges and duck boards and such, because it's a flat woods, so it's seasonally wet. And this season, it's pretty wet. But the Meltzer family had that foresight to protect that land. So that way today we can open an old growth forest and give us a glimpse into the past. But also by us protecting it now, we're going to have it there for the future. And one of the ideas that I like to think about with this whole Next Indiana Campfires program is that the land that we're protecting today and setting it aside can be the inspiration for future writers. Mm-hmm. And just like if I was inspired by Aldo Leopold, who wrote this stuff in the 30s and 40s, we're looking generations ahead by protecting stuff today.
How did we choose? There are 18 of these places. How did you go about choosing which 18? What were the priorities there? I'm going to give each of you a crack at that because it
That's
sounds
great.
Like you collaborated.
Yeah, I have the boring version of that question, was we always conceived of this project as something we would do in partnership with organizations around the state who have deep and personal relationships with different parts of, you know, different parks, different preserves. So we did a call for community partners that we circulated through an environmental educators network. We also reached out to a few folks that we knew personally. For instance, The Limberlost was a site we knew we had to be at. The mm-hmm. Dunes were a site we knew we had to be at. But that call for community partners just brought forth a lot of really incredible people that, you know, as a humanities person, I didn't know very well. These are all Cliff's friends, I think. But, you know, that really came with so many creative ideas for how we could customize these experiences. But early we had a conversation with Cliff to talk about what are the different places that are ecologically interesting and significant. So maybe Cliff could talk a little bit about that.
Cliff, yeah.
Yeah, and I think, again, thinking about Indiana, we really are, in many ways, culturally, where South meets the North. And we have a lot of Southern heritage where people moved to Indiana from the South.
Yeah, the migration patterns come
up.
Yeah,
and the thing is and we're known as the Crossroads of America. But biologically, ecologically, we were the crossroads of America before we were America. Yeah. And that's because we have bald cypress swamps from the South. We have the beech maple forest from the Northeast. We have the tallgrass prairie that stretches from Indiana to the Rocky, prairie in one form or another, from Indiana to the Rocky Mountains. We have boreal flatwoods that you might find in Canada. And then in Northeast Indiana, we have the lake country that looks like Minnesota. We really are, and of course, where we are here in central Indiana, it was millions and millions and millions of acres of slightly rolling beech maple and oak hickory forest. It kind of varies between just a few feet of elevation change. You can go from oak hickory to beech maple. So we were a crossroads 1,000 years ago.
And I'll just say, one of the ideas that I have loved to explore is, you know, how landscape shapes culture. And I really have enjoyed thinking about how, you know, how are these different currents that we kind of see ecologically also reflected in our linguistics and our politics and our religion and all of those other ways that we think of culture.
And how much of this, we've gotten a tweet from a listener named Shannon who's making reference to saying, The state has two Jean Stratton Porter sites. I loved her books as a child. Hope Campfires brings more people to those great places. And that sort of anticipated my question is, you know, it seems like one of the themes here is also driving home the point that place matters, where, you know, where you are from counts for something. You're nodding your head, Leah. So
I don't have anything more eloquent to say than that. But this is one of the ideas we want to explore and have Hoosiers be thinking about is place matters, where we're from is special, that you don't have to go out west to visit ecologically or geographically interesting places, that you don't have to. A lot of times this kind of literature is associated with the West, but we have a really incredible tradition of environmental writers and thinkers here in Indiana that we also want to, who have thought a lot about this question of place and have worked in different ways to describe it in kind of literary terms. It's part of the project I'm most excited to share with Hoosiers.
We are talking about Next Indiana Campfires. It's an Indiana humanities program pairing books and the outdoors so that Hoosiers will think a little more about the state's wild places and think about how they can preserve them. If you'd like to join the conversation, you can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi, on Twitter at wfyi, or you can do what a listener named Carol has done and give us a call at 866-476-3881. Carol, welcome to the program.
Hello. I was calling to see if the limestone quarries were going to be part of this program.
What a fun question. You must
thanks
have gone
much.
To school in Bloomington.
Thanks very much
no,
for the call.
No, good. My ancestry includes the Italian stone carvers who came to this country and worked on landmarks. And I just was curious to see if that was going to be part of your conversation.
I love that question.
Thank
so
you.
One of the places we are going is actually a former quarry that's DePauw Nature Park. It's out in Greencastle next to DePauw. So it's an old quarry. We were just out there a few weeks ago for a board meeting and got to do some trekking through. And it's a beautiful place where you can kind of, I mean, one of the themes we've been talking about is how, you know, bringing back places. So this is an old quarry. When they dug out the quarry, they discovered an underground aquifer. So now there's a lake that refills at the bottom of that quarry. So that's one place we're going that is specifically a quarry. But I love this idea of seeing if we can find some literature that helps us think about the geology of Indiana. One of my favorite essays that I read as part of the preparation is called On the Banks of the Lost River by Susan Neville, who teaches at Butler. And it's all about tracing the Lost River, which kind of sinks through the different karst landscapes of southern Indiana. It's one of the things that's most distinctive about our landscape. And she kind of meditates on this this weird and strange landscape, and she has this amazing quote, you know, how can you live in a place where sinkholes just open up and they swallow your house, they swallow your barn, they swallow your cow? And the other person responds, we walk on faith here. And I really love that quote about landscape and culture altogether.
What is the we've talked about the greatest time commitment in terms of the hike or the traveling piece of this, and that's the overnight backpacking mm-hmm. trip and all of that. What's the longest commitment in terms of the reading? What's the most demanding?
We'll do all the reading together on the trail. So the longest reading at any given time might be a page and a half that we would read together.
Okay.
Over the course of 90 minutes of walking, we might read a total of 4 or 5 pages.
Oh, okay. And there is not any point when you should have read the book beforehand?
Absolutely. No homework and no quiz.
No homework.
That's not fun. We want to have fun.
No quiz. So walk me through. We've talked about some of the, what are some of the other books? I mean, we've talked about Teal, we've talked about Stegner, we've talked about Mary Oliver.
Yeah.
Who are some of the other writers?
Well, I think two writers that are environmental writers that have, you know, aren't associated with Indiana but have connections are Alda Leopold. So we'll be reading some of that land conservation ethic, that fierce green fire. John Muir also lived in Indianapolis, and you know, before he went out west and did so much to awaken Americans to this need. Another writer that I'm excited about, Susan Neville, and then, of course, Scott Russell Sanders. His essay, A Mind in the Forest, is actually excerpted in something we have called a Trek and Talk Toolkit, which is a free resource that you can request on our website, and we'll send you everything you need to do a DIY version of this hike, including a snack and a text and discussion questions. So we are using a Scott Russell Sanders piece there, and I bet there'll be a lot of Scott Russell Sanders on the trail, too.
Well, that's worthwhile in and of itself because he is a marvelous writer. We are talking today on No Limits about Next Indiana Campfires. It's an Indiana humanities program that pairs books and the outdoors for the bicentennial, encourages all of us Hoosiers to explore the state's wild places and maybe do something to hold on to them. My guests are Leah Naumius, who is Director of Programs and Community Engagement with Indiana Humanities, and Cliff Chapman, who is the Executive Director of the Central Indiana Land Trust. I am John Kroll. You're listening to No Limits. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StatehouseFile.com, and your host. We're talking today about Next Indiana Campfires. It's an Indiana humanities program pairing literature and nature to help us Hoosiers explore Indiana's wild places and think about ways that we can hold on to them. My guests are Leah Naumius, who is Director of Programs and Community Engagement for Indiana Humanities. I keep wanting to call it the Indiana Humanities Council. I know I shouldn't do that. And Cliff Chapman, Executive Director, the Central Indiana Land Trust. So we were talking about the 18 places and the fact that, you know, it's really more sort of a community reading sharing of books, not an assignment. Which of these do you think is the most unusual or the most distinctive, the one that people will think, oh, I wouldn't have thought of that?
In terms of a landscape to go explore?
Well, or a pairing of a piece of writing with the landscape.
Well, you know, that's a really good question. I'm kind of thrown back a little bit. I think one of the landscapes I'm most excited to explore are the bald cypress swamps down in southern Indiana. Because they are such a distinctive and unusual feature to have so far north. And it's a part of the state that I don't personally go to very often. I'm also very excited. We're going to be doing a canoe trip up in northwestern Indiana on Trail Creek, which is in Michigan City. And they bring down these big, long canoes, like what Native Americans and early fur trappers would have had. So they're bringing down these big, long canoes. So we're going to be long canoeing. And this is actually really close to DeSable's trading post. So those of you who remember fourth grade Indiana history might get really excited about that. So those are two that I'm really excited about. And I'm looking for old descriptions of the Indiana landscape in that part of the state by these kind of fur trappers, because I want to know what that was like.
Cliff.
You know, I think we're going to surprise a lot of people that come and visit the Glacier's End Nature Preserve. Yeah. In October. It's in Johnson County, and when you get in there, you will not believe you're in Johnson County. And it really is where the last glacier ended. And there's a mix of plants and animals there that have northern and southern, from the north and from the south, and they're living there side by side, miles away from where you'd think they would be. And we've had some researchers down there. We did a BioBlitz with the Indiana Academy of Science last year, and there's new species being described. New species of science have been discovered at this property in Johnson County, Indiana. So I think it's going to be a big surprise for folks that just have no idea there's that much topography and elevation in Johnson County and just how beautiful it is.
What places, Cliff, do you hope people will discover through this? I mean, we've been talking in almost every break about how Hoosiers aren't aware of just how many tremendous natural resources, how much wildness there still is in Indiana. And in part, that's because we have been making a transition from being a rural to an urban state and all of that, and lost a certain amount of touch with that. What places do you most hope that Hoosiers will reconnect with in their state?
You know, I think something that I hope people can connect with would be at all the places they go to. And that's the subtle beauty that we have in Indiana. And I think sometimes folks think, you know, we don't have mountains, we don't have oceans. Well, you know what, we don't. But I get so inspired by the wonder of nature when I'm out in a natural area, whether it's someplace like Melcher's Woods in Shelby County, or the dunes up by the lakeshore is, you know, it might have been the seventh wonder of the world. I mean, it is incredible there. Or a place like Donaldson's Woods at Spring Mill State Park. It's a spiritual place to go. And I think finding that connection to the beauty we have in Indiana, where maybe it's not windshield beauty that you always get in Indiana, but when you get out and you start exploring, I think it stacks up to the best.
Leah.
Can I read a quote from one of the Indiana writers I discovered as part of this project? He's a Fort Wayne native named Michael Martone, who writes about the flatness of our landscape. And here's what he says. The Midwestern landscape is abstract, and our response to the geology of the region might be similar to our response to the contemporary walls of paint in the museums. We are forced to live in our eyes, in the outposts of our consciousness, the borders of our being. Forget the heart. In the flatness, everywhere is surface. This landscape can never take us emotionally in the way smoky crags or crawling oceans can. We stare back at it. Beneath our skins, we begin to disassemble the mechanisms of how we feel. We begin to feel.
How difficult was it to pair the writers with the places?
You know, that's a process that's still ongoing because we're working with our scholar facilitators to pick the text that they're really passionate about. But I don't think it's that difficult. If anything, the problem is narrowing it down. Scott Russell Sanders alone has written like 20 books, and they're all worth reading and talking about. Jean Stratton Porter, in addition to writing books like A Girl of the Limberlost and Freckles, which is why she's so widely known and beloved, you know, she was writing those books in order to fund her real passion, which was ecological research about moths and birds and things like that. So another writer where there's just so much to choose from. It's been fun to find people like Michael Martone, who are maybe less well-known, who are writing about the flatness, right? Places that maybe aren't as easily able to capture the imagination as hills or old growth forests or sand dunes. There's no shortage of good and bad poetry about the sand dunes, too. I'll also let everybody know.
Yeah, Michael Martone won the Indiana Authors Award for National Author a couple of years ago and wrote a delightful book many years ago called Fort Wayne is Seventh on Hitler's List, which it was both very moving and very, very funny. Which of the places is going to be the most difficult for people to get to, would you say?
I think the most physically demanding experiences are the backcountry hike that we're doing in Morgan Monroe State Forest. We're going to be going in about 8 miles. Now, we'll be doing that over the course of a day, and we're working with an incredible team of outfitters named DNK Presents, who are experienced at taking novices out in the woods. And then the Coles Bog Trail up at the dunes is the kind of the iconic, you know, 4 hour, I don't know, 3.5 mile stretch where you go up and down, and all the different kind of dunes succession ecological landscapes we'll be exploring.
We've gotten an email question from a listener, and if you'd like to reach out to us by email to join the conversation, you can find us at nolimits@wfyi.org. This is from a listener named Kenny, who says, the special locations that you focus on are certainly important, but it should be just as alarming that there seems to be no political or zoning constraint on the destruction of beautiful open spaces and forest nodes in Indianapolis and other urban locations. People who live in such neighborhoods care deeply about this, but seem to be helpless. Please comment. I'm going to throw that one to Cliff first.
Well, I think the first thing someone can do is join their local land trust. So the Central Indiana Land Trust represents members from 11 to actually we have members well outside of our service area. But there's some truth to that. I mean, I don't think we can always look to government to regulate these things. And so what we do at a land trust and land trust across the state of Indiana is we're going out and trying to protect the best remaining places to get. And we pay fair market value. We raise the dollars and we protect these places. And most often we open them up to the public. For smaller things here in Indianapolis, like smaller things in neighborhoods, there just was Indy Rezone passed. It became law on April 1st. And I think that's going to make a difference in the future to try to kind of change the way patterns will be as places are developed in Marion County.
We keep saying, obviously, that this is about pairing books and the outdoors to get Hoosiers to explore wild places and to think about preserving them. That's a somewhat sort of nebulous.
Mm-hmm.
What constitutes success for this? What do you hope will be the outcome of for people who do this?
Well, I think the first and most obvious is, do people come out and go to places they haven't been before or think about those places in a new way because they've paired it with literature? You know, it's been interesting to me, a place like the Limberlost, which has been preserved as a historic site because it's the home of an author, they don't typically do readings of Jean Stratton Porter out in the marshes that are being restored. So I think, you know, this is, first of all, just getting people to have kind of this new kind of experience and hopefully have a good time. You know, if they sign up for another one, I'll know they had a good time on the first one. I think some of our longer term questions for the people of Indiana are to spark some awareness and thinking. What is this history of stewardship, right? The person who just emailed is thinking about our laws and what we can do to impact those. I think it's instructive and useful to look at the history of how Hoosiers have thought about these questions before, what solutions they've come up with. And as Cliff alluded to earlier, Hoosiers 100 years ago were at the forefront of national thinking about ways to protect land. You know, maybe we've lost some of that legacy of not being a national leader, but we could be if we were in the past. And then I think the other question that I'm really curious about for the Indiana humanities is, you know, what role can the humanities of talking about literature have for helping Hoosiers talk about important ideas, things that matter? You know, that this isn't just, you know, a cute program in the library, but that we're actually having serious and important conversations, hopefully in a fun and unusual way, that are really about what we want the future of our state to look like. So, you know, if we're getting people to think about that, we are a nonpartisan, non-advocacy organization, but I hope that some people will be inspired to be more aware and pay attention and contact their legislators, join a land trust, donate land to a conservation organization if they feel moved and inspired by these experiences.
What do you hope will come out of this, Cliff?
You know, I hope, and I wanted to kind of circle back to something Leah said, and that's the legacy of conservation that we have here in Indiana, and maybe some folks that are listening are scratching their heads. But this is our 50th year of the Nature Preserves Act in Indiana, and I encourage folks to actually Google it and read it. It's beautifully written for a piece of legislation. It was passed in 1967. And so 50 years later, our Meltzer Woods property is going to be dedicated as a state nature preserve on May the 12th by the state, and it's going to be the 50,000th acre protected under the act. And I think that's quite a legacy, that we're going to have 50,000 acres protected this year as state-dedicated nature preserves, which is the most protection you can have on a piece of land in the state of Indiana. So I think as folks are going around and thinking about these different books and what people have written to inspire people to think about the environment and nature and visiting these important natural areas, to think about the legacy that we're inheriting now and what we can do with that in the future and how many acres are we going to have protected 50 years from now.
And obviously, the impetus for this is the bicentennial, the fact that the state's experiencing its 200th birthday, and we're marching toward that. And there are a lot of activities that are designed to celebrate some part of our heritage this year. Is this something, though, that might continue beyond the bicentennial year if it is successful or what?
Yeah, Leah? That's a great question. So the short answer is yes. I don't think we'll do 18 in one year like we're doing this year. But I think that we can imagine ourselves over the next few years at Indiana Manatees. You know, we found partners like Central Indiana Land Trust that we like working with, and it's been a successful relationship to do, you know, maybe five or six of these a year, special opportunities for people. Like I said, we've also created some do-it-yourself materials. So we hope that people, you know, maybe the bicentennial is the reason they get interested and they say, well, I've never been to the dunes or I've never been to an old growth forest. I better go do that. It's 2016. That's my bucket list. But that they'll want to keep doing these kinds of things, and they might read something and they want to read more. And they kind of like this wacky idea of going outside to do the reading.
So I'd like to hear both of you on this one. If you could only block out the time or whatever to do one of these, one of the 18, and I'm assuming, you know, because you're individuals and all that, your answers are going to be different. And I'll take away the dodge here of saying, oh, they're all wonderful and all of that. You got to pick one. You know, which one would you recommend? I'll throw it to Cliff first.
I'm going to have to go with Glacier's End in October because it won't be open to the public for several more years. There's a lot of work to do there to get it ready to be open. So it would be an opportunity to see a place before it has a parking lot, before it has a designated trail system. And you'll be the visitor. And when I go there now, it's a different experience than if you go to a state park and there's signs that tell you where to go. You're really in nature. And it's a different experience.
And who, again, are you going to be reading on that one?
We don't know yet. That one, that's in October. We got some time. Yeah.
So I've got time to start pushing for a little Aldo Leopold.
Okay.
I think your concerns have been heard.
Yeah.
Okay, Leah. One of the experiences I'm excited about that I haven't gotten to talk about yet is something we're doing in August, where we're going to be biking along the Cardinal Greenway. So we'll be leaving Muncie. And for those of you who don't cycle, you can just meet us at the site. We're going to be biking along the Cardinal Greenway out to Redtail Nature Preserve, which is a preserved prairie. And I think the story of prairie restoration in Indiana is one of the most remarkable stories that's happening right now, both through DNR and nature preserves, to bring back, you know, this is the land that's the best for farming. So there's not a lot of it left, and we need to restore it. And it's so important for all of our ecological health, and it's beautiful. So I'm really excited about that one. So we'll be biking out to the prairie and then walking around at sunset across the prairie before we settle in for our campfire. So for those of you who like to get on a bike, you can join us in Muncie and bike out to the prairie. For those of you who just want to do the walk, you can meet us at the preserve. That's in Sunday, August 14th.
And how long a bike is it?
That will be a 12-mile bike ride, and it's very flat. That's one of the beauties of biking in central Indiana. So we're estimating to take about an hour or so to bike out there.
Okay, and do you bike back as well?
Yes, and then you have to bike back.
So it's a 24-mile
round trip. That's right, so that's a good point.
24 miles.
About 2 hours or so of biking.
Of biking to come back. And is that the one you're most looking for and you most would recommend?
I think it's one of the ones I'm most looking forward to. I'm a relatively new cyclist, so I was really excited to get a cycling trip on the docket.
And what do you do? I probably should have asked the question, should have asked it much earlier, but suppose you have one of those days when the skies just open up and it pounds rain. What happens then?
I feel like it's like when I was a kid. Unless there's thunder and lightning, probably the show will go on. We'll probably deal with almost all the weather. Unless there's lightning that would present some sort of danger, the show will go on. So that's part of the fun of being in nature. It's unpredictable.
So you'll continue to do the hike, or you'll do whatever, even if it
is, so bring a poncho.
The weather is nasty.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, we're getting close on time here, so we probably ought to walk people through the logistics again. If they want to register for one of these hikes or to find the schedule,
yes. So
where should they go?
They should visit indianahumanities.org/campfires, indianahumanities.org/campfires. There you can see all 18 hikes that we're doing across the state, as well as just click through and register there. You can also there request a Trek and Talk toolkit, which is a DIY kit that has everything you need to go and recreate this kind of experience with your friends or family. And those are free, so we encourage people to visit our website to request one of those. We're also blogging weekly now through November, kind of sharing history of Hoosier stewardship, introducing some of the big themes. We have some fun guest posts by people about the history of stewardship in Indiana and some of these writers. So visit our website.
And the cost basically is
$10 to $15.
$10 to $15.
Unless we're paddling, then it's $15, or we're backpacking overnight, which is more expensive.
Is $200. And the next one is May 11th, right, Cliff?
Yeah, at Oliver's Woods. It's up by Keystone at the Crossing.
Okay, and what time will it start?
Starts at 6 o'clock, and we'll be done by 8:30 or so.
So it's an evening,
a twilight, after work.
Twilight hike. Well, I would like to thank you. I hope I get a chance to do one of these, because
it sounds like
it would be absolutely fascinating. I would like to thank my guests, Leah Naumius, who is the Director of Programs and Community Engagement with the Indiana Humanities, and Cliff Chapman, who is Executive Director of the Central Indiana Land Trust. I am John Kroll. You have been listening to No Limits. Thank you for joining us.
No Limits is a production of 90.1 WFYI Public Radio, Indianapolis. Executive producer, Michelle Johnson. Producer, Shannon Cagle. Interactive media coordinator, Scott McAllister. Technical producers, Cedric Freeman and Chris Flood. And board engineer, Joe Hatcher. Abby Terzini screens our calls. No Limits is made available through IPBS, Indiana's public broadcasting stations.